Hey everybody, welcome back to Top Bins with Twins. We are currently in between match week 2 and 3, and there's been some movement in the FPL world lately about early wild cards. But first off, Luke, tell everybody how you're doing so far.
I'm doing great in general in life. FPL wise, and not so hot.
That's okay.
If I'm going to be very honest. But I do feel very optimistic about my team going forward. The first two game weeks have not played out the way that I would prefer them to, but that's perfectly fine. That's the beauty of FPL, is that there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs. We're starting on a down point to begin this FPL season. But yeah, so that's pretty much where I'm at the moment. Paul, how are you doing? How's everything going? How was your game week 2?
Game week 2 was okay to me. I think there were a couple performances, like the Cole Palmer performance, the Chelsea thrashing of Wolves, which honestly, if you watch that match, it was one of the most entertaining FPL, like from an FPL, even Premier League matches. Like, that's why we love the Premier League, because matches like that just pop up.
Right, and I'm more of a stats-based person. Paul's a bit more of an eye test combined with some stats there. But it was really fascinating that Wolves and Chelsea had the exact same XG at the end of the match. Yeah. And Chelsea ended up with 6 goals, Wolves 2. Ultimately, both of them overperformed their XG. But how crazy is that? That they almost overperformed their XG by about 4.5 goals.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and watch the first half of that match, it looks like Wolves could be up 5.
Like, yeah, they had opportunities.
It's crazy. As an FPL manager, you look at Chelsea and I think I still have question marks. I think it feels like on any given, depending on their opponent week, they could almost have matches like this, but it also feels like they could be blown out every match too.
So, you know, I'm just thinking about this now, and anyone out there who's listening to the podcast, if you know that if this is a thing, let me know. But it would be really interesting if there was a statistic we could look at that was based around XG, but more so based upon chances created. Right, as opposed to the direct chance of the shot going in from that position at that angle, instead of that data, if it was looking at the potential of scoring a goal from a certain situation set up in the field, right? Like, let's say you have an attack where there's 2 defenders back, you have 4 attackers flying forward. What is the chance of the goal happening at that exact point?
I'm sure there's
something
a
like that,
out
right?
There's
got to be something like that. I think that would be really telling, and that kind of speaks to that first half of Wolves, right? Where I feel like they had a lot of opportunities, but they just weren't able to convert on them, or the final ball wasn't there.
Yeah, I agree with you, Luke. That would be an interesting stat. I'm sure that on the back end, a lot of the Premier League teams have data sources and the ability to pull stuff like that.
Yeah, I think
I'm sure that that's out there somewhere too at some site. If anybody, like Luke said, knows about that, please share it with us, because that would be a really cool thing to see. But
we'd love to hear about that.
I think that match also signifies Wolves being an interesting attacking team maybe to invest in that's differential. I mean, I would go Cunha probably, most likely, if I had to. But Al Nouri also could be a good option, too, for just getting attacking returns.
Right, but they've conceded how many goals up to this point in the season? I know, you know, 6 against Chelsea. I'm not sure exactly how many before then. I think defensively, it's a bit precarious. But the big thing there, right, is Gary O'Neill has changed his tactical setup. He's gone from a 5 at the back to 4 at the back these first 2 game weeks. And Wolves have given up a lot of chances throughout the course of that. So something to keep in mind there, that maybe Wolves defenders are not the way to go, and their fixtures completely turn around game week 7, I believe, somewhere plus or minus 1 week there, and they will become a hot commodity whenever that happens, because Wolves are a good team. They just have probably the toughest start to the season, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, so they played Arsenal to start, Chelsea, then they play Newcastle, Villa, Liverpool, Brentford, City, Brighton, Palace.
Yeah,
it's a tough run of fixtures.
There's nothing easy about that run that they have there. So, you know, as most people have done, they're probably a no-go for FPL for a little while, but once those fixtures do turn, certainly keep an eye on them, because they have some assets in there, and as Paul said, they're very attacking as well. So something to keep an eye on there.
Yeah, but like, let's highlight our teams real quick before we get into kind of like next week's stuff. So my team was sitting on 72 points, had with my goalkeepers and defenders, I had basically the only return was Jedi Robinson, who I think is going to be a good FPL asset. I wish they would have kept the clean sheet, but I mean, Fulham have had a lot of fluctuations with their back line over the past like weeks with transfers out and all that stuff. So kind of not the best of this time, but I mean, Ipswich away, I think is still a good matchup for this week. Jedi feels like he could get a result anytime. Smith Rowe in my midfield really helped out with that 10 pointer. He got the goal. He's looking like kind of like what both me and Luke expected going into from preseason, especially into the season. Now he looks like he's going to be one of the best price points at 5.5. So happy to have him. And then I had Jota and Saka return in my midfield. Besides that, Bruno and Eze, just pain, man.
Bruno, yeah, Eze. That hurts. That combination there, for any other managers out there who have Bruno and Eze in your team, you're getting very unlucky not having returns from him. And that's purely what it is. Eze and Bruno both have been good picks. They just have not put the ball in the back of the net in the Premier League. We have seen, you know, Eze, for example, performing outside the Premier League, getting a goal and assist in their most recent match in the cup. But back over to you, Paul. After the pain of Bruno and Eze, who else? You haven't talked about your forwards yet, have you?
Yeah, so I had Haaland. He got me 34 points with the captaincy, which
nice. Good pick with the captaincy.
Yeah, that was a fun match to watch, though.
An interesting question, though. Yeah. Did you think about triple captaining Haaland?
Nah, I think it was a little early in the season for me to want to use triple captain. But, I mean, if you used it on him, it worked out well for you.
Yeah, cheers if you did that.
Yeah, that was it's a very ballsy move. Then I had Isak, who's been very disappointing so far. And that is my team on 72 points. Let's hear about yours, Luke.
My team, equally. So I was a little bit behind Paul this week. Ended up on 65 points for the game week. Not quite the week I was hoping for. I did captain Haaland, although he was my vice captain. Foden got the captaincy for me this week, and him being out, being sick, really puts a damper on my FPL season, right? Because I brought him into my game week one team with the intention of knowing that he's probably not going to play game week one, ended up getting a half. And then he's sick. Right, doesn't play in game week two. That means I have someone coming off my bench, and who came off my bench was Leif Davis, Ipswich defender.
Not good.
So that's not great. But overall, managed to get 65 points. My returns this week, I got a clean sheet from Trent. I get the 10 pointer from Smith Rowe in the midfield. A blank from Eze and Rodgers. Jota gets the assist, but I do want to, and then I got Haaland's return, which ended up being my captain in Isak.
We should talk about Rodgers.
Let's talk about, that's where I was going to go, is Morgan Rodgers, as hopefully everyone out there knows, Aston Villa played Arsenal over the weekend, and Morgan Rodgers, in my opinion, looked like one of the best players on the pitch.
He looked great.
He looked strong with the ball running at his feet. He looked creative.
He was terrorizing Arsenal's midfield. There's no doubt about it.
He made Declan Rice and Partey look like he was playing middle schoolers, really, is what it felt like. There was a time when Rodgers made a run from the middle of the pitch, as he was kind of doing throughout the course of the match, but he got the ball on the right channel and was running towards Arsenal's box, and Partey was trying to just shrug him, like trying to get the ball from him, right? And Partey's a strong guy, and Rodgers just carried him for about 10 yards and then tossed him to the side. And in that moment, you just can't help but be amazed. And there were a lot of people, and then also FPL managers as well, I think, that saw that performance against, you know, arguably one of the best teams in the league, and seeing that has persuaded a lot of people to start bringing him in.
To say the best, Luke?
Arguably the best team in the league. Yes, for sure. So I'm a bit aggrieved by this, because Morgan Rodgers is currently at 12% ownership. That has skyrocketed since before the game week, before game week two. And Aston Villa have a great run of fixtures. that he, in my opinion, he is going to return. It's just a question of,
I mean, he should have returned against Arsenal easily. I mean, Watkins,
he should have returned.
Absolute peach of a chance.
But it was a great save by Raya. That needs to be said. Morgan Rodgers, though, should have returned, and I do expect him to return over the upcoming game weeks. But what a player, man. He looks like he's truly special. And at a young age of 22, I think, you know, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, that's I'm sure Chelsea will come knocking on the door sometime soon asking for to get bring Rodgers in. They better do it quick.
No comment. So, ultimately, though, I kept Solanke on my bench. I have Foden on my bench, so two players automatically who were just not going to be in for my game week. I'll be going into game week 3 with two free transfers and attempting to not make any transfers going into game week 3 as well, so that I can continue to roll. If I can go into game week 4 with three free transfers, I'll feel really good about it, have some flexibility in what I'll be doing in the future, and see how the team's set up. So, looking forward to game week 3 and hopefully having a little bit better week than game week 2.
Yeah, it's do you think, Luke, so we'll kind of get to, I guess, a little bit later about the wild card situation for game week 3, but like looking at your team right now, do you wish you could make transfers? Do you want to have the ability? I know you were talking about ideas of like rolling more transfers, but would you make changes right now if you could?
No, I don't think so. From the mindset, because the only issue I really see in my team right now is not knowing if Solanke is going to play in game week 3 or not. That's the issue there that I really see, because when I look at my midfield, I have ESR, who just got a goal last week.
And against Ipswich away.
Eze, who is looking prime for a massive haul sometime soon. Right,
against a weak Chelsea defense.
He is at the center of everything they're doing. And if, you know, we'll talk about this on the pod too. Crystal Palace have been disappointing to start out the season. They're going to be fine, in my opinion. I don't think that this initial run of their season is going to be indicative of who they are going to be through the course of the season. And then Jota, Rodgers, and Foden, all three of those midfielders, I'm more than happy to have. And frankly, I mean, especially with Eze, Isak, primarily those three, and Solanke as well, I see all of them being some of the best FPL assets for the entirety of the season going forward. So the more people that transfer them out right now, the happier I'm going to be in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I agree with you, Luke. I think FPL is a marathon, not a sprint, you know, and the whole goal of it is to have as many points as in your team at the end. And I think it's super, super easy to get wrapped up in like 2 weeks and think there's a doomsday scenario or that your team's falling apart, in all actuality, when if you think your players are close to returning and they haven't, stick with your gut. Then if your gut's telling you to stay with it, I think you should. So
like Paul's saying, I think this is how you miss a really big haul, right? You have a player who's knocking on the door. The stats look really good and they pass the eye test as well. If you believe in them still, keep the faith, right? Do not fall for, you know, they haven't returned in 2 game weeks. I got to get them out. It's like people who have Ollie Watkins right now and they're transferring him out before the run they have coming up.
Yeah.
That seems a bit crazy to me.
That's what we call a rage transfer after last week.
Yeah. And so on that note, right, the 3 most transferred in players right now, as of now, so this is Wednesday before game week 3 starts on Saturday, Madueke is the top transferred in player, ESR is second, and Danny Welbeck is third. Paul, do you know who Brighton play next by chance?
They play
Arsenal. Away. And who does Chelsea play? They play Crystal Palace at home, who's a good team, right? That is a good, solid Premier League side. I don't think Chelsea are going to have the joy that they did against Wolves in this match against Crystal Palace. Do I think Crystal Palace will keep the clean sheet? Probably not. But there's not 6 goals there for Chelsea. And as we've seen, pretty much everything's going to go through Cole Palmer. If you're going to bring in a Chelsea asset, I think Madueke could be somewhat of a trap, in my opinion.
I think the only Chelsea asset that I would really be dead set on owning right now is Cole Palmer at this point in time. Because, I mean, we saw the Nkuku owners, what happened to them the first 2 weeks of the season, which he could end up being a great FPL asset, but right now he's just not getting the time to play. And then, I mean, you have so many different options at Chelsea with Neto, with Madueke, with Joao Felix, with Jackson. I mean, there's just a wealth of options that Maresca can choose from. And the simple thing is that, like, we want to see our FPL assets getting consistent minutes, knowing they're going to have chances to return. And I just don't think you see that in the Chelsea team besides for Cole Palmer, you know?
Yeah, I agree as well. And we never know when rotation's going to strike. Last week in game week two, we had a lot of managers upset because Nkuku was benched, right? That puts them in a tough position because Nkuku was supposed to be the one, right? Where he's a great player. We thought he'd be getting consistent minutes. And I think a lot of these Madueke transfers in are probably a lot of sideways moves that people are doing, going from Nkuku to Madueke. That seems like the logical thing that's going on. I haven't looked at the numbers themselves, but it seems really reactionary. And on the other side of game week three, we could easily be looking back on this going into the international break with none of these top three players transferred and even returning at all. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't shock me. The one that would surprise me is ESR not returning, because they do have a good fixture with Ipswich away. So, you know, something to keep an eye on, though. And FPL is always, always dynamic, always changing. It seems like things are trying to change very fast at the moment with, you know, these cheap enablers allowing people to change up their teams. And Cole Palmer, really, like, if you looked at the template from Twitter or Reddit or whatever it may be, Palmer was not in a lot of teams, although he does have a high ownership. And now we see people flocking to go to Cole Palmer. So, and we're not even talking about Son, who's the biggest returner, one of the bigger returners of the week.
That one hurts.
Yeah. Was he in a lot of your drafts, Paul?
He was up until the Solanke transfer. Makes sense. I'd say he was in probably maybe like 60% of my drafts beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And that's just part of it. I mean, I think I got distracted by the shiny Solanke toy. And sometimes, you know, you should stick with what you know and what's consistent for years.
The grass is always greener, right?
The grass is always greener.
I am kind of religiously checking Tottenham's Twitter account to see if he's in training, see if there's an update out there. But it seems like whenever you have Postecoglou saying in his pre-game week two press conference that they have an international break coming up, whenever he's talking about Solanke, that really makes you think that Solanke is probably not going to be back till probably game week four. But looking at my team, I'm fine with riding through. I have enough assets and enough good players I believe in to where I don't need to transfer him out. So I'm fine with that. And I left some money in the bank, so I'm fine with a couple price drops. That's perfectly okay with me. But yeah, and I think Solanke, once he gets back and he's healthy, especially if he's playing game week four, I feel good about having him in my team.
Yeah, I agree with you, Luke. And Spurs just seem like a team, I mean, especially after last week with Son and like their attack, where it just feels like they're going to get goals. I don't know. Defenders are a question mark. We'll see. I mean, we had Van de Ven who got an assist. Poro had that goal a couple weekends ago. So, I mean, they're going to produce attacking returns with their defense, but we'll see if clean sheets are going to be something that they're going to be able to get down this year.
Yeah.
I highly doubt it.
I do, too. I do, too, we'll as well.
We've been wrong before.
It happens. It happens all the time. Real fast, though, I think we should maybe... What did you think about Holland? You touched on it a little bit when you were talking about your team, but what did you think of Holland's performance in game week two against Ipswich?
Yeah, I think that it just feels like those are the kind of performances that we can expect week in and week out from Holland. Like, if he's going to... This is kind of what we were talking about to the lead-up of the season, is that he typically has always... overperformed his XG, and last year he underperformed. Mm-hmm. I had that correct, right? Sometimes that rests in my brain. Yeah. But it seems like last year I kept always joking about him being on fraud alert.
Well, you are an Arsenal fan.
I mean, whatever. I mean, that's not even my bias. But it just last year it felt like Haaland was missing a ton of simple chances that he usually finishes. And I think we're gonna see he's back this year, and it just seems like he's gonna be almost a perma captain all the way through the season, because if he gives us the ability to have three goals in your team, especially when he basically walked through the second half and found that last goal. I mean, like, City were just kind of, like, trotting through the game. Which, I mean, honestly, there is a shout that if they gave up that pin to Ipswich, which was kind of questionable in my opinion. Of course, that's not even my Arsenal hate or my Arsenal love. It was just like that could have, in another world, that could have been given. And then they walk through a second half against Ipswich. Who knows what happens if it's 3-2, you know?
Yeah, you never know.
That's what I mean. City killed these games, but we know what City are like early in the season. But if Haaland's in form, I think he just has to be in your team and almost has to be captain every week.
So following up to that, right, I've seen, you know, there's a narrative out there of certain content creators, just, you know, FPL community in general, that selling Haaland going into game week 5 is a solid plan. And to provide a little bit more context to that, to the listeners out there who aren't able to, you know, look at their fixtures at the moment, City go West Ham away, Brentford at home, Arsenal at home, and then Newcastle away in game week 6. Following game week 6 with Newcastle away, they have 5 green fixtures on the FDR back to back to back, right? And these are all really good fixtures. It's Fulham, Wolves, Southampton, Bournemouth, Brighton, right? Those are a little tricky, but Haaland is set and primed to score in at least all of those fixtures.
But I mean, even think about the Arsenal one, I would probably not consider captaincy. Like, he's not going anywhere out of my team just because Arsenal's defense. But even Arsenal's defense this year looks even a little more susceptible than it did last year. And I think it's just early. They're just figuring stuff out. But Haaland against Newcastle, to me, is a good fixture for him. Like that,
I agree.
That seems like a match that, like, a sneaky match to really get a lot of.
The tricky part about that, in my opinion, is going to St. James Park. That's been a difficult fixture for City for quite a while. But you're kind of talking about Haaland against Arsenal. I feel like there's going to be a goal, at least a couple opportunities in there for him, because Arsenal, like you said, have been a little unstable at the back.
Yeah, it's early.
They very, very fortunate. Very fortunate to have 2 clean sheets going into game week 3.
Yeah.
Frankly, there probably shouldn't have been a clean sheet, but otherwise, for no other reason than Raya making some incredible saves to keep those clean sheets.
I'm calling it now, Luke, though. I know De Bruyne has been good early in the year, but the run through Arsenal, Newcastle, over those 2 weeks, I would love to own De Bruyne.
I almost did. The last and final thing I was trying to decide for my FPL team going into game week 1, as the deadline was approaching a couple minutes out, was do I want De Bruyne or do I want Foden? And I went Foden because I thought he'd be the better long-term option. And that has made me miss out on 15 points in my team that I would have had otherwise. But yeah, it's a long game we play here, right? And we'll see how it eventually pans out at the end of the day. So.
Yeah. But you want to take a little break and then we can roll around to discussing.
Yeah, we'll talk about
game week 3 wild card.
A little bit of a game week 3 wild card in case anyone out there is thinking about it.
All right. We'll be right back, guys.
Thanks.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Top Ends with Twins. We took a quick little break and we we're just doing some discussing of some different topics here, but I have a quick question for Luke that we're going to ask at the top of the pod, because sometimes we like to ask each other questions and just get the mental juices flowing a little bit. Luke, if you had to pick one player to start a wild card around right now, who would you pick if you're doing game week 3 wild card? Who's the one cornerstone of a team?
The boring answer is Haaland, because he has to be in every team that I would build. The next player that would be the top of the list that is going to be first name on the team sheet for me, I really think it's Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Interesting. I had a different variation of the same idea.
So you're thinking Salah?
And Robertson.
Okay. Well, these wild cards are going to be a bit spicy because Robertson might be in my draft as well.
Wow. Oh my God. What is
happening? How crazy is that, right? Live here on the pod, Paul and I are agreeing on something.
Yeah, usually that's pretty rare for this, so.
Yeah, that's wow. What an outlier. Okay, well, Paul, do you want to dive into the team that you're thinking? What would you recommend for people To start out with, let's do this. Before you go into your team overall, who are the three most key players that you would recommend to have in a game week three wild card?
Oh, sorry, people. We may have a little lightning in the background there. We got some storms going on. But it's looking at just somewhat form of these teams. I looked over form a little bit over fixtures at times. But my three main components are Watkins, Salah, and Son, which those three may be a little surprising to some people in regard that Haaland is not involved with that. But to me, it just feels like Watkins with his run going forward, he easily could have had two against Arsenal. Just very straightforward. I mean, we know from last year that he's going to assist, he's going to score, he's going to get you points at the top. His price point of 9.0 is not too bad. And then Salah just feels like he's kind of back to like just killer form where he is going to get results week in and week out. And then Son just always has that explosive ability to score multiple goals in any given match. So it really just feels like the three of Salah, Son, and Watkins are a great place to start in this wild card. And that, like I said, that does leave out Haaland, which is a hot take. But I just feel like those three, maybe the money's going to be better spent there. And I realized what we said earlier in the podcast. I'm contradicting myself, but that's just a feeling I have right now.
I think that that's an interesting way to perceive this, right? Because for so long with an FPL, since Haaland has come to the Premier League, we've seen him as someone who has to be in a team. But the reality is that with the way that players are premium this year, we can't do that.
Yeah. So basically I agree with you, Luke. It's it would be a very risky move, and we just have a dog enter the podcast. What's up, West? But yeah, I think no Haaland is, like I said, very risky, but it's something that could pay off long term. And that's also like Luke said, the fixtures for City. Let me pull that up.
Sorry, everyone. I want to apologize for that last thought I had. I was very distracted because there was a little dog knocking on the door, and I got thrown off my game a little bit there. But
a little doge.
What I'm trying to say, though, right, is I think the prices are so fascinating that you can justify not having Haaland in your team, right? Because I think it all depends on how you build around the premiums in your team, because there are enablers like, let's look
at
Smith Rowe. I think Rodgers will come into that picture eventually. João Pedro, Danny Welbeck is cheap as well.
Jedi Robinson.
Jedi, not Kwanzaa. That one was a swing and miss from a lot of managers. But if we keep in mind that there are really good enablers on the edges and from the fringes that we can build our teams around, the options that we have for our teams are so much better than what it was like last season, for example, where there was a template where it's so easy. But having players like Palmer, Saka, Foden, all of these premium assets, you can build a really good team and not have Haaland.
You absolutely can. And the one thing that I'm missing from my wild card that I think could really bite me in the ass is a Chelsea attacker, which we talked about earlier. We both really believe that Palmer is the only the most reliable Chelsea asset, and he's just too much of a price point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible for me that I could go from Son to Palmer if I really wanted to.
Right.
But it just feels like I just believe more in Spurs week in, week out in their attack than under Chelsea. But like you said, Chelsea does have the ability on any given week, almost depending on who you're playing, to score six goals. So who knows?
Yeah, and the thing about that too, right, as you're saying, Cole Palmer is most likely the one to go to because they have so many attackers, right? You have probably 8, 9, maybe even 10 players competing for 4 spots there, and that and ultimately there's probably 7 or 8 that are competing for 3 spots. That makes it really difficult on managers to figure out who's going to be playing for Chelsea week in, week out. I expect for us to continue to see a lot of rotation across the board from Chelsea. And Cuckoo will probably start this game week, but
you're going to be the most FPL thing ever is if Cuckoo has a hat trick this week.
Yep. And I think
it would be the most FPL experience
it would not surprise me at all to see that happen.
The most visceral FBL experience. But so for the rest of my wild card, we'll just kind of dive into mine. I think I have Watkins, Ja Pedro, and Mateta up top. Because if you look at Crystal Palace this coming week, it's good. The Chelsea matchup, I really like that. But then you have Leicester at home and United at home.
Really? Okay, that I really thought you'd have Havertz in your team.
I don't love the next run of fixtures for Arsenal. I mean, you really look at it, it's Brighton at home, which Brighton look like they're rejuvenated and back this year. Like, they really feel like there's something cooking there again. And then you have Tottenham away, which is a tough matchup. I could totally see Havertz scoring in that. And then City away, too. It's just like those are just really tough matchups that, like, as an FPL manager, City and Arsenal have been it's been a boring fixture over the last couple of years. It's not really a matchup where I see an attacker going crazy. I mean, it's possible. I mean, I could see De Bruyne, Saka, Haaland, Havertz, Trossard. I think I could see all those assets returning and being good assets over for that matchup. But, like, I don't know, back to back. And then, like, Tottenham away, I do see goals in that for Arsenal, too. But I don't know. There's just something about it that I think Mateta at home to Leicester and then and then at home to United, I just feel like those are better run of fixtures.
So my question to you, Paul, do you think Tottenham will score against Arsenal?
I could see it happening. If it was at Emirates, I think there's a lot better chance of Arsenal keeping a clean sheet. But Spurs being away, they're just so strange team, like where they're always just going to create chances, I feel like.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about how Postecoglou tweaked his system a little bit this past week, where he's pushing basically what seems like seven attackers forward almost at times. And he's holding Bissouma back with his two center backs as well. But when you have that many attackers pushing forward, you have seven people that are basically sitting inside the box or right outside of it.
It's overwhelming.
That is really hard to defend. And that's kind of what we saw with Everton, right? They kind of really just overwhelmed Everton with their attack. So I think Spurs are a really good team to target.
We'll see, though, against Arsenal if they adjust that at all. Because if you put seven forward, I think you're really opening yourself up against Arsenal, and that's a dangerous proposition, you know?
That is a dangerous proposition. I completely, completely agree with that on you.
Yeah, so the rest of my midfield is Son, Saka, Salah, Smith Rowe, and Eze. I think Eze is really, like we said earlier, he's going to be one of those players that is just going to return. He's been unlucky so far, but that's going to change. And then the back I have Harwood from Southampton, Fays. I can always and then I have Robertson, Munoz, and then Robinson.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's okay. Just kind of like a money thing. And then I had Martinez as my goalkeeper for Villa.
Okay. I like that. That's Martinez is a good shout there, especially with their upcoming run of fixtures.
Exactly.
Like that back line, though. But my back line is kind of similar to yours. In goal, I ultimately just decided to stick with Flecken in goal. I think he's an interesting keeper. Game week 3, they have Southampton at home. You know, ideally that would be a clean sheet, but Brentford look a lot better than they did last season. It seems like they have that pep in their step again. And the way they play, they're very tactical, very
deliberate,
military in the way that they do it, right? So I do expect them to keep a fair amount of clean sheets, and he's decent at getting save points as well.
I just thought of somebody I wanted in that team.
Yeah, but so my back line, I have Rico Lewis, which is someone who would rotate in and out. Not totally sure about that pick. I think it's a bit of you're rolling the dice a bit with Rico Lewis, but hey, it's FPL, so let's roll the dice a little bit.
It's bold. It's very bold.
There's an even more bold pick and an even more bold one after that. But I picked Ndelovich. I really hope I'm saying that right. He is the back for Aston Villa, who's supposedly going to fill in for Matty Cash with his injury that he sustained. They were talking
about that on FPL,
FPL pod?
Yeah, but there's the one they release off the bench. Yes. When they release on Mondays. Mm-hmm. And I really like that podcast. That one's
yeah. No, they do. They do a great, they do a great job.
All the FPL pods, but go ahead, Luke.
Yeah. So Indelovich is someone who I think is really interesting. And if you can get the next four game weeks from him, they have two matches at home. I could see three or four clean sheets in those matches, just depending on how Philip performed, but someone that's really interesting, right? And he's an enabler, which is the most important thing. The other two, so the other three defenders outside of Rico Lewis and Indelovich are Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson.
Yeah,
so Liverpool. Both of them, double fullbacks, and they both have been very, I mean, pretty attacking, right? Robertson's kind of been the surprise, but I really feel like doubling up on Liverpool defense is something that feels like, it feels like right now we're at that point last season where people were starting to realize that, hey, Arsenal's defense is actually really good.
Yeah.
And I think Liverpool are in that same position right now because they're much more possession based than they were with Klopp, and they don't have opposing attacks just running at their back line without any protection. Mm-hmm. Right. I think they're a lot more practical, but they still have that attacking threat going forward. So we get the attacking output from their fullbacks potentially. So Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, a really good option in my opinion. I think that's something that we could see some people moving to over time. The only problem there is the price that you're paying for them. That takes up a lot within a team. So
the price does, but if we see the solidity from the back that you're talking about with Liverpool, mm-hmm. and I mean, look at Robertson last weekend. He showed up in places where he almost had a headed goal. Like,
right, exactly.
And then you have Trent, who looks like he's just bound to return this year.
And he's on set pieces. Bound, so. We know he's on free kicks as well. He had one this weekend where I thought, you know, it felt very likely that it could be going in, but he just misheaded it. It was in a really good position, though. So that pretty much sums it up for my defenders. The other defender I did have is Wout Faes. He'd be someone who we know is going to... Well, it's a bit risky because he's been asking to be transferred out. He doesn't want to stay at Leicester, so keep your eye on that if you're wildcarding. But if he stays, a good asset, in my opinion.
I agree.
In the midfield, I have Luis Díaz, who has looked really good the first two game weeks.
Some honestly, you could argue maybe the best form of his Liverpool career so far.
Yeah, I definitely would not fight that.
He's had runs, but I think he looks like he's explosive and getting returns.
You know? And statistically, he's been one of the better Liverpool players as well. So
yeah.
His XGI is higher than Jota and Salah both. So something to keep an eye on. The other four midfielders that I have in this draft that I put together is ESR, Son, Saka, and Rodgers. So no Eze is a big, was something that I was debating going back and forth on, but it just feels like getting Son and Saka in is really where the difference is in my current team, right? Attackers who are, you know, they're the talismans for their team. And they're going to be really good assets going forward. So, on top of that, my three strikers I have are Haaland, Isak, and then Jebison, which is the forward for Bournemouth. I was debating this, but I didn't quite get to the point of doing it. I think Isak is the one that would probably go if I was going to make changes to the team. You could downgrade him to someone like Muniz. I would actually even be okay with going from Isak down to Solanke with the mindset of maybe he won't even play game week 3. Yeah. But I think Solanke is going to be a great pick throughout the course of the season, as long as he stays healthy, of course. Mm-hmm. And then that would allow me to change some other things around in the team too, and solve some of those budgetary issues. But that's my rough kind of game week 3 wildcard. I think that the most important players to me there within the team, the top three, kind of as Paul was talking through earlier, I think that Haaland is number one on my list. Trent is second. And then third is a tough one, but I would have to go with Saka probably is who I would say is probably most important. It would be Saka or Son. So
yeah, I obviously have three different ones than you, but I do see your thought process there, and I think we're just doing different interpretations.
I think so too.
And I don't think either of us are far off.
And as FPL managers, right, we talked about this many, many different times, but everyone prioritizes different statistics, different ways to play. And this is a great example of that, right? Because Paul and I, you know, we prioritize different things in our teams. Our teams usually end up being somewhat similar, yeah. But, it's really up to the manager on who you want to bring in, how you want to play. Do you want to play aggressive? Do you want to play a little more reserved, you know, and manage your team in, you know, a more conservative way, but it's up to each person. Right. And that's the fun thing about FPL, especially this year, is there's lots of different ways you can be successful throughout the course of the season.
Yeah. This year you can get a little more creative with FPL, which is a lot of fun because, as Luke was saying earlier, last year we kind of had a template that I think was pretty easy to follow and very straightforward. And now, thanks to the FPL price, people that priced it, because they made the game a lot more interesting this year, which makes it more fun for us. I would like to say that I think a game week 3 wild card is something that, like, we'd obviously played around with ideas and everything. It's not something I would do personally. Just if it was up to me, I think it's just really early to use a game week wild card, game week 3 wild card. I know that with the way I set up my team, I built it for more than just the first 2 game weeks. So hopefully with that thought process in mind, I just think reactionary moves as an FPL manager are really what kind of like get us in the long run, you know, and it feels reactionary to do it. But also at the end of the day, like we always say, it's your game to play. If you set your team up and it's just all falling apart, go ahead, change things if you have to, you know, like go for it. It's all team discretionary. And I'm not trying to bash anybody that wild cards. That's not what I'm trying to do at all. But it's just a thing that I think that wild card is better saved for later.
Yeah, yep. You're trying to implore some. You're coming from a point of rationality, saying, "Hey, there's a lot of time left to go in the season. Maybe 3 might be a little early." And I have to say, I do agree with that. I think that there's a certain train of thought though where game week 3 wild card makes a lot more sense, especially if you are rolling transfers up to this point. So the ability now to be able to wildcard and retain the transfers that you have, say you wildcard now, you have 2 transfers, you'll be coming out into game week 4 with 2 free transfers as well, right? And that's a huge addition. It's a huge plus to the way we can play the game. So it's not quite as much of a deterrent from wildcarding because,
yes, I agree.
Say you wildcard in a team you don't like, you save up, you roll 3 more free transfers. By 3 game weeks after that, you have 5 free transfers you can make and make those changes to that wild card and just continue to evolve your team, right? So there is a certain degree to where I think game week 3 wild card is okay. My main hesitancy with a game week 3 wild card is I'm worried about the international break. That international break coming up, it happens every single time. We see players go and play for their countries and a fair amount come back with injuries. It's just the nature of the beast. It's still early on in the season, and you just never know what's going to happen. So say you wildcarding going into game week 3, and you come back with, let's say, 2 yellow flags, 1 red flag after your wildcard. That is going to be really frustrating.
It's going to be tough.
And I just implore anyone out there, if you're thinking about game week 3 wildcard, maybe hold back on that and play that in game week 4. Right, because we'll know who's injured at that point. We know a little bit more of what to expect after having 3 weeks of data, and that makes the decision a lot easier.
I agree, and I think another key point to remember too is that we've had 2 match weeks with these teams. It's not like we know exactly. I mean, obviously we've had previous experience of last year but there's been so much turnover in the Premier League from last year to this year that we're still. I mean, even like Arsenal, City, the best teams in the league, Villa, are still trying to figure themselves out this year. So, I mean, we're not on solid ground yet to really have enough data to tell us exactly where we think things will be going over the course of the whole season. So that's why I also just think it's just early, you know? It's kind of like this is still catfish territory, you know?
It is. And, you know, if we're looking at non-penalty XG goal differential, which simply put, compares the difference between a team's XG and the XG they've conceded. At the very top of the table right now, we have Liverpool, Tottenham, and Brighton, and then Nottingham Forest right underneath that.
Crazy.
That's not what we'd expect coming into the season, but a lot of this is fixture dependent. And, you know, teams like Manchester City and Arsenal, Manchester United, Aston Villa, they've played some difficult fixtures up to this point. So when we're looking at that data, especially coming out of game week two, it's hard to make conclusions because
yep.
people haven't played enough teams to where we get a good sample size to take some really valid conclusions from the data. So anytime you're consuming something from a content creator in FPL or whether it's just, you know, football related information, be careful coming to conclusions at this point in the season. It can be helpful, but don't base all of your decision on just statistics at this point because it's a small sample size right now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Luke. But yeah, I think we've covered a lot in this podcast. I think, do you have any final takeaways?
My final takeaway is that I'm very excited for where my team's at, frankly. I think that it has not performed up to where I want it to, ultimately. But as we say many times on this pod, your overall rank in game week two does not matter at all. What matters is game week 38, and I'm playing the long game here with my team. So I will be going into game week three, rolling a transfer, coming out of the international deadline with international break with three free transfers, and excited for where my team's at.
You'll have options, Luke. That's good. That's like yeah. you said, that's a good thing to really be aware of as an FPL manager, that upcoming international break, because like you said, we never know what's going to happen, but I totally agree with you. I think I'm excited about where my team's going right now. I really think everybody should transfer Eze out. He just seems like a horrible asset at this point.
Well, at this point, over 500,000 managers agree with that, which is wild.
Yeah, he totally yeah. shouldn't be in anybody's team.
Eze has over 500,000 transfers out as of this point in time. And Isak has over 600,000 transfers out.
Yeah, and those are two FPL assets we both really heavily believe in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it would be curious to see the data about if that was before their EF or Carabao Cup.
Mm-hmm.
If that was before, after, where most of those numbers come from. I'm sure it was leading up to that, maybe the deadline.
I can tell you that these numbers are continually going up because when I looked at it the other day, I think Eze has probably had about 75 to 100,000 transfers out today alone.
Okay, I gotcha. Well, I don't know. I think those are, I guess, like you said, I believe in my team. I believe in the process that we have building. So just trust the process, guys.
Yeah, trust the process, everyone. Trust the process. But thank you guys for joining us for the pod this week. It's been a lot of fun to film this episode with you, Paul. Mm-hmm. And we look forward to interacting, engaging, and really kind of just seeing how Game Week 3 plays out.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. We will talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, everyone. Bye.